Zach.
Ken.
Have you ever seen my floppy disk?
I'll show you my hard disk.
It'll take your head clean off.
Ooh. It's an even harder disk now.
Yeah, it's not good. It's not good, Zach.
I'll delete this, don't worry.
Yeah. No, this definitely can't go on the show. So, welcome to episode 9 of the PerSec podcast. It's crazy.
Yeah, episode 9. Like, just me typing that in just now before I hit record. It's kind of surreal.
This is, like, pretty much the longest I've ever done anything. So, it's...
And what was it about 9? It's, what is it, the first odd number that is also not a prime number?
Yes. But that's, like, because we're a little weird and we talk about things like prime numbers too much. But yes, that is indeed true. I think so. So, let's see. 1, 3, 5, 7, 9. So, as soon as we hit, like, the 20s, then we start going down the tube real fast. So.
Yeah, and then we'll, you know, have Chad to ride with us all the way there. Hey, Chad.
Yeah, Chad. Chad's been working real late. I feel sad for him.
So have you.
And he got yelled at last night. It wasn't good.
We got yelled at? By who?
Yeah, just like some grumpy user.
Yelled at him? How do users even get to him, the server administrator? On Slack. Oh, Slack.
Yeah, and guys just being, it was nasty. It was a little bit of a beatdown. I'll tell you more. I'll tell you more about that online, offline. That was funny. So.
Okay, I'm excited.
So, before we get to today's topic, a quick piece of follow-up. So last week we talked about VPNs, and I think we both mentioned we use TunnelBear. TunnelBear is a good VPN service. Their bear branding is a little annoying. I think we talked about that too, but overall they're pretty good. But this last week they did something pretty cool. Actually, I think it happened like the week before, but I neglected to mention it. But they released a full audit of their VPN service. It was done a full external security audit.
That's right. I actually got that email too.
Yeah, and that was pretty impressive, I thought. They showed a great deal of transparency and vulnerability. Some of the things in the audit weren't probably what they wanted to see, but that's what we want to see in a provider. We want to see somebody who's interested in the tech, who's not just out to make a buck, who wants to treat their customers right. So kudos to TunnelBear. I was pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, good job. But I have a question, though. What were the negatives?
So there were a few what they called critical vulnerabilities in their Chrome extension.
Ooh.
I'd have to pull that up. So they didn't. So, you know, the way a lot of these things go is they'll run the audit, and then they're given a chance to fix it because they don't want, you know, security vulnerabilities to be known. That just encourages an attack. And then they'll release it after it's fixed. So most of these have been completed. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick.
That's awesome. You know, it's actually interesting you bring that up because just this past week when I got to work on Tuesday because of the eclipse on Monday, I was greeted by the IT guy of our building. And I'm not an IT guy anymore, at least there. For the building. I do IT work for the sub company that works there, but I mostly do video work. Okay, anyways, who cares? But the point is, the IT guy came in and he asked for the MAC addresses of all the devices that we have in our sub company space, which is like 5 different people.
Really?
Yeah. And we're like, at first when I heard about this, and I said, no, I'm not doing that because, you know, I don't want to give them a reason to track what we do. I mean, they're Black Rifle Coffee and we're Ready Man. You know, we're a separate company. They shouldn't be able to do that. But then he explained to me what happened was somebody had had downloaded a virus which compromised their system over the past weekend. And so they were trying to A, track down who it was, and then B, prevent it from happening again by kicking off all unrecognized devices. But the problem is, once I, you know, explained to my coworkers that, hey, I need to gather this information, and they're not tech guys, they have no idea. Once I told them that I had to gather this information, they're like, is that going to allow them to track what I search for, to track what my internet history is? And I said, well, they've already been able to do that, but this will allow them to know who exactly is searching for what, because they'll have the exact device ID down. And dude, they all flipped. And once I told them about TunnelBear, it was like 5 instant signups for TunnelBear. Now everyone runs a VPN there.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. You know, tunnel bearers, VPNs are cool. You know, there are legit reasons for, you know, whitelisting MAC addresses like your IT department's trying to do.
Yep.
It's not very productive, but I guess I can see why they're trying to do that. There's better options, frankly, but that's fine. But yeah, I highly recommend VPNs to everyone. So that was an interesting topic. You know,
it was good.
Anything to keep you and your lizard picks secure, I'm in favor of.
Thank you, Ken. I never felt safe until I met you.
So, just for the record, I'm happily married to a woman that's not Zach. So in case that was ever like questioned.
And just for the record, I am looking for a single, no kids, unmarried lizard that may be in the Salt Lake City area. Please contact me at zachisasadanddesperateindividual@hotmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The sad thing is, hotmail.com probably has that email address already registered. So you may be sending some fine ladies to someone else. Okay, so today we wanted to continue on our fundamental topic list, and that is one of my favorite topics to discuss, to my wife's chagrin, and that's backups, right? And so we're going to talk a little bit about the why and the what and the how and the when today. And so, you know, we talk about a lot about personal security here, and, you know, we put on our tinfoil and we talk about all the things that are out to get us that may or may not be true. But backups are part of the triad there, right? So if you look at security as it's traditionally defined, it's always defined as confidentiality, integrity, and availability, right? And I would argue that a good backup has all three of those attributes. Certainly, you want to be available. That way, if something goes wrong with your system or you need to retrieve some information, you can go ahead and get it easily. But you also want that data to be to maintain its integrity. You don't want like a bit to flip in the middle of one of your files and make it unreadable. Something I'm concerned a lot with all my digital photography is this concept of bit rot, and that's the idea that, you know, the data in the file will actually change over time. Not a lot, but it could cause enough issues to degrade the quality.
Well, how does that happen?
Well, so, I mean, you think about it, you break it down, you know, a digital photo as it sits on a disk, right? It's a bunch of zeros and ones.
Right, okay.
And so, a one turns into a zero.
Well, how does it just magically do that?
Well, so there's a couple of ways. So there's actually some interesting issues related to mechanical hard drives. So that's just all it is. It's a record player. It's got a little needle and it writes 01 01 01. And so over time, the magnetic mark that was made there can be changed. It can be influenced through outside factors such as radiation. You know, I mean, if you want to get like too far down the road, it could actually, you know, get hit by some form of sunburst to change that, or a rogue magnetic field. Anything can cause a little bit of change. And they actually talk about the orientation of your hard drive matters too. And so if you have a hard drive that's oriented vertically, the bits can actually fall off of the drive, right, due to gravity.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's like a thing. And so there's some recommendations out there that you spin up the drives every like 180 days just to stop that from happening.
What if my drives are, I mean, if they're always spinning, then no worries, right?
Well, then you have to worry about the drives failing. But yeah. But here's the other thing too. So like, I mean, right now, you're running NTFS. There's no integrity checking on that file system. Right? And so, you know, you might have a, you know, Zach_lizard.jpg, right? And so that file system always knows where that data is kept, but it has no idea what that file, like the bits that make up that file is, right? And so if something is actually manipulating actually the raw data stored on the disk that makes up, you know, your lizard picks, you know, you'll never know until you try to open it and it's too late. So there are other file systems such as ZFS, which do integrity checking. And so what it'll do is it'll keep a, it'll keep multiple copies, or it'll keep a hash or a checksum of your file. And so what it'll do is, so occasionally it'll say, you know, take a look at this lizard photo, calculate out a mathematical hash of what that file should look like, and then compare the two. And then if they're different, then you know you have an issue.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of when we talk about integrity, right? A backup is only as good as the data's there. You might backup every day, but if your backups aren't worth a damn, then, like, you know, you're not any further ahead than you were before. And so, you know, I think that integrity is probably the least widely known or least widely recognized aspect of a good backup strategy. That's one of the reasons I want to talk about today. And the third, of course, is confidentiality, right? So, you know, I might do a really great job of securing my PC, but then I might have a hard drive sitting right next to it that has, you know, a backup of it that could be completely wide open. And so we need to talk a little bit about that, too. So, you know, we already talked a little bit about the risks that face some of your data and from an integrity perspective. But if you look at it from an availability perspective, I mean, there are so many reasons why, you know, you require a backup. And people, you know, I think the statistics show that only there's something like 9% of people. I kind of made up that statistic. I kind of remember it from this year's World Backup Data. But some ridiculously low amount of people who regularly backup a computer. Their computer. And so some people might copy it off to a disk. Some people might, like, save files and, like, their, you know, Gmail. I mean, I guess that's technically qualifies in a limited fashion, but a true backup, I don't think many people actually do that. And so if you look at, you know, just physical damage to a PC, you know, from a flood or a natural disaster or theft, you know, this is where you get to see some, like, really heart-wrenching stories. You know, really good friend of mine up in Washington, where I used to live, he was up in Spokane and had his laptop and a backpack and the, you know, backseat of his car, and somebody broke in the window and stole that laptop. And that was the only place that he had the pictures from his, like, first 3 weeks of his, I guess his middle daughter's life.
Oh, no. Oh.
You know, and just because some scumbag wanted that more than he did, they're gone, right? So that really gave him some religion about backups.
I'd imagine. Oh, my God.
And so he was always pretty proactive about it. Another friend of mine, actually, same thing happened to her, and she got her laptop and tablet stolen out of a car in Spokane. Spokane has some not great areas. We actually used some of the backup tools to track this person down. And she didn't get her stuff back, but this person who had her computer actually ended up going to jail.
Oh,
so,
wow.
That was kind of interesting, too.
I mean, that's kind of nice.
The big question is, you know, there's just a certain amount of uncertainty that comes with, like, your data and where you keep it. And so if you only keep it in one place, then your risk that is present, it has a huge impact on your life, right? And so, you know, whether or not I have a backup or not, I have the same probability of dumping a Diet Coke on my computer as anyone else. But if I have a backup, it really lessens the impact of, you know, that sort of situation. So that's what we're all about. We're all about mitigating risk and ensuring things do things right. So there's some news this week that kind of precipitated this conversation. So CrashPlan, which is an online backup service that a lot of people used, they announced they were getting out of the consumer backup space this
week.
Oh,
no. So it's going all corporate?
Well, yeah. So basically all they're doing is raising their price. They basically doubled the price. Which, so if you're using the Surface, I don't think, you know, I think $10 a month is a fair price to pay for it. But,
so, wait, can a regular consumer like me still go and get
service? I think so. Yeah, I think you can. I don't think there's any difference. They just raise the price, and then they're, you know, they're kind of marketing. They're they're positioning their system to be a more professional thing. So I don't think it really matters. CrashPlan was really popular with people who had like network attached storage devices, as you could actually run it on the NAS itself and then use that to back up your data. They had some other cool features that a lot of people were lamenting the loss of. You know, we'll talk about another really great alternative, but so backup's been the news today a lot. And actually, today, my favorite backup utility, Carbon Copy Cloner, which we'll probably talk about too, that got switched to version 5.0. And so I figured, you know, we got to talk about backup someday. Why not today?
Yep. And Comcast recently just downgraded my upload speed from, what was it, 100 megabits per second to 5. So, you know, now my backups take about 3 days instead of, you know, 3 hours.
That sucks. Why'd they do that?
It's wonderful. I have no idea why. It just suddenly happened. And I'm wondering, why is my daily backup suddenly taking more than 1 day? And that was why. Wow. So that was great.
Wow.
So it's a good time to talk about backups.
Wow. Oh, Comcast, you're earning that most loved company award all over again. Way to be.
I would try to yell at someone, but, I mean, come on. What are they going to do? It's just some guy who's just me like, I don't know. It's going to be somebody cut a wire. Who cares?
Well, maybe they'll fix it.
Maybe. That's okay.
Never attribute to malice, Zach, what can be adequately explained by incompetence.
And you think the guy in Phoenix, Arizona, who picks up the phone call is going to say, that was me, I'm sorry.
No, I just think it's possible that, like, you know, somebody like flipped some switch. I don't know.
All right.
Who knows?
It's fine.
My condolences. So I think one of the first parts you have to first place you have to start with backups is really understanding what data you have and beginning to classify it into segments. Now, if you have my grandfather has, I don't know, probably 40 gigs of data, and that's all pictures. For him, the calculus is pretty simple. Like, we just run a whole a computer backup. It's done every hour with Time Machine and his Mac. And for his purposes, that's suitable. And for most people, it's probably suitable as well. But the people who listen to this show, they're typically not normal. And so we want to take a little bit deeper dive. So if you look at classified data, if you classify data into, you know, essential, must have, nice to have, irrelevant, or some other sort of criteria, it can help you structure how your backup structure or how your backups should be constructed. So for my most essential data, which is my the pictures that I have, they're in many, many, many places. And that protects against a lot of different risks. That protects against like physical loss, protects against, you know, a localized loss. You know, you could have 10 backups if they're all stored on the same, you know, shelf next to your computer and somebody comes in and steals them, then, you know, you're out of luck. And then as I go down the line, I begin to become less concerned with certain aspects of data. So for my music, for example, I'm pretty much a Apple Music subscriber right now. So if I were to lose all my music, like, that would bum me out. That stuff I've been collecting since I was in high school. But that's not a, you know, end of the world kind of situation. Like losing all of my financial records or, you know, my pictures would be. And then all the way down, there's stuff I do for work that I keep on my local machine that I can always get from them. And that's pretty much irrelevant. So if you classify your data, it gives you a better context of where stuff needs to go and then how you want to build it. In the enterprise system, data classification becomes a really important piece of the puzzle. You can't provide the same level of protection to everything, so you're forced to pick and choose. And it becomes a really valuable tool in prioritizing, your resources. So I think you also need to look in terms of sensitivity as well. Some backup solutions are more secure than others. If you have like really sensitive data, you may not want to throw it up into, you know, Dropbox, for example. Whereas, you know, pictures, Sally the pet lizard, right? At least the PG ones. You know, you could throw those up in Dropbox pretty easily. Did I put you to sleep, Zach?
Sorry. I was mulling over my data classification options. Yeah. I was looking through the ones and zeros and figuring out, do I like this? Do I like 100011 or do I like 11002? Wait, did I say two? I meant one.
I feel judged, Zach.
Hey, I will say though. Actually, no. It's I'll wait for later. I'll wait for later. Keep going.
You're keeping me titillated, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
So one good rule of thumb, and if there's anything that I want to share with you, is this idea. It's not mine. It's widely known. It's a concept of a 3-2-1 backup. Okay.
Hmm. What?
So 3-2-1, right? Like the first three prime numbers in reverse order, Zach. And so the idea is that if you want a solid backup strategy, you do the following things. One, you have three copies of all of your data, right? Two, you have them on two different formats. So you might have it on a hard drive, and you might have it on an external hard drive, right? Two different medium. And then you want one of those copies to be off-site, right? And so if you followed that simple rule, the simple 3-2-1 rule, I think you would avoid 99.9% of all possibilities where data loss is a possibility.
Wait, so it's what? Okay, so it's three backups on two different media with one being offsite.
Right. Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be three backups. Because the copy on your computer, that's a copy as well. So where traditionally you'll hear this is you'll say, okay, one, or have a copy on your computer, have a copy on an external hard drive. That protects you against, like, loss of your computer. That protects you against, mechanical failure, your hard drive, or theft, or anything like that.
Well, I have a question here, and tell me if I'm being too soon on this. Why not just have one offsite? You know, one being backed up into the cloud, and just leave it at that. Why have two extra physical ones?
Okay, so we're going to talk about online backup, and you bring up a great point. Like, if you do online backup, you're 99. You're ahead of like the vast majority of people. You're in the top 10 percentile, right? So it's hard for me to criticize that. Online backups have some interesting trade-offs, though. And so...
if we'll get to that in a moment, then we can just save it for that.
Okay. So, but you're exactly right, though. Like, if I have a... I keep clones of my startup disk on my Mac, right? And so it's pretty trivial. If I were to lose my Mac and get a new one, I would just plug the latest clone into my hard drive, restore it to the disk, and then I would be up and running. And that's not just like a backup of my files, that's like a backup of everything, all of my applications, all of my settings, all of my files. And these are bootable clones as well, so I can actually plug them into any computer and actually boot from them and do my business. So that's part of the reason that there's definitely advantage over these online backups. But an online backup needs to be, or an offsite backup, it could be online, or it could be, you know, a hard disk you keep at work, or some other mechanism, or some other location. You know, a lot of people have, like, backup buddies, you know, where you say, hey, you give me your hard drive, I'll give you mine, right? And,
backup buddies.
Yeah, we just do a swap-a-roo every week.
Why would I ever want to copy my hard drive and give that to, you know, a buddy of mine so I can get theirs? Why? Why would I ever do that?
Redundancy, right?
Well, I mean, are they going to make a backup, or are they just going to have it so that way they can open it up and find all my lizard pictures?
No. Well, so if you're smart, you'll encrypt it, which we're going to talk about too. But
okay.
The whole idea is that, like, you know, it'd be very unlikely for you and your friend's house to both burn down the same day.
I get it. It's just because it's offsite, and then a buddy has it. Okay.
That'd be a coinkadink, Zach.
I don't believe in coinkadinks.
Unless we both like work for the mob or something. Then like maybe that reduces some of the risk mitigation there. But so again, three copies of your data. One can include your local PC. Have another one on an external hard drive or some other medium, and then have another one offsite, either on another external hard drive at work, at a friend's house, at your mom's house, wherever, or you can throw it up in an online backup.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of options there too.
Yeah, blah, see, just take your hard drive over to your friend's house. See, just tell me your address. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. I'd keep your hard drive, Zach.
I'll keep yours, Ken. I'll keep yours to close to my bosom.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so that's the best advice we can give you. 3-2-1. Now, what these backups actually entail, that's a separate, separate discussion that we want to talk a little bit about. Because it's changed a lot with the, prevalence of the cloud and these various online services that we have. And it really makes us question, like, what's actually a backup? You have a lot of options. There's a lot of people think that one option is better than the other. We're not here to really preach. I'll tell you what I do, which is definitely overkill. Again, tinfoil. I get that. But we just wanted to, have a dialogue and sort of give listeners some options to think about. So the first one might be a little controversial, and that's something that I'm not sure I would classify it as backup, although some people would, and I think it's a good thing to have. And that's various syncing solutions, right? So that could be something like Dropbox or Box.com or Google Drive or Amazon Cloud. They used to have an unlimited cloud drive for $60 a year. That was a great deal until somebody uploaded 2 million gigabytes of porn to it, and that kind of put the kibosh on that thing.
2 million gigabytes.
2 million gigabytes.
The funny thing is, I don't even question the fact that that many gigabytes of porn exists. I don't even question that. Like, that's, oh yeah, of course there's that much. And of course somebody has that much in their possession.
That's probably one of our former coworkers, if you know who I'm referring to.
That's why he's a former.
Yeah, former. And then you might have like iCloud Drive on a Mac, or there's a lot of these other solutions that are out there. So syncing solutions are sort of an interesting quandary. They definitely have your data offsite, and most of them definitely have some mechanism for restoring data. But are they a true backup? I mean, I would have to say no. A lot of times, they're very restricted in what they do sync. A lot of times, the mechanisms for restoring aren't great. And one thing that concerns me a lot is that their focus is on confidentiality, or their focus is not on confidentiality. And so, like, information such as, like, financial records or health information, I may not want to throw up on Dropbox or iCloud Drive, whereas I would, other things I want to be more accessible to. So it doesn't really fit all the requirements from it. I certainly can't boot from it if I have a hard drive failure. But I think it does fill some need. I certainly use syncing solutions myself. And they do play a role. I talk about my clone backup. So I don't take a clone every day. I take a clone every week or whenever I have, like, if we take a bunch of family photos, I'll plug in my hard drive and run a clone just to make sure I have a copy of it. And so that gives me some capability to roll back. But what happens if I haven't cloned my hard drive in 5 days? One of the tools that makes me comfortable with that loss is knowing that these syncing solutions exist. And it can backfill a lot of the information that isn't present on that current clone. And so if I make a change to my photos since then, all my photos are in iPhoto or in Apple Photos library, iCloud library, and so they'll just sync back down. And so I'm confident with that. So I think they definitely fill a solution, but it's probably not ideal.
Hey Ken, two questions for you. So when you do a clone to an external hard drive, does it basically rewrite over the contents of the drive, or does it just simply place a file within your hard drive that sits alongside all the other clones you've made with like a date on it?
Yeah, so there's different ways of doing it. I can't speak to all of them, but let me tell you how. So I use a program called Carbon Copy Cloner. It's only available for Mac OS. They just released version 5 today. It's $20. I was happy to pay it. It's a bargain.
$20 a month or $20 just to have?
No, $20. It's just a piece of software. Right? It's just a piece of software.
Nice. So,
yeah, just a license for $20. I firmly believe in supporting their work. It's important work that they do. Happy to pay it. And so the way Carbon Copy Cloner works is you plug in a hard drive, and you can do two things. So you can actually do a clone where it's just a straight bit-for-bit copy of whatever's on my disk, right? And so I could plug it in my computer, and I'd have the latest clone. And so if my hard drive died, I'd be back in business, right? There's actually a second option you can take, which is called have a safety net, right? And what safety net does is it saves all of the deltas, all of the change files, into a separate directory, right? So if I take a clone of my drive, let's say at 1 p.m. today, it's going to copy like all the files that are on my drive, right? And then let's say at like 1:02, Zach sends me a picture of a lizard in a tank top. and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to save that. It's going to be in my pictures folder, right? And that's the only change I make to that desktop, or I only make to that machine. And I run another clone. The only thing it's going to write to that is going to be that picture that was added. And so it saves deltas, and then I can still revert to the latest clone, but I also have some historical information as well.
Yeah,
so it's kind of a best of both worlds.
I was about to say, that's pretty nice because, I guess we're not into that yet, but it's nice because, if you want to do your backup, you're not copying over 250 gigabytes of data every single time. You're just copying over what's different, which is really nice.
Right.
But I will say, yeah. I will say this, like, what were you going to say first? And then I'll bring up my point.
No, I think that one disadvantage to Carbon Copy Cloner and tools like that on a Mac is called Super Duper. I think there's a solution on Windows called Clonezilla, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, it's Clonezilla.
I think that's like a thing. I've never used it, but it's sort of like a copy there. Is that it's not as seamless as some of the other backup solutions. So have you ever used Time Machine on Mac OS?
I haven't, no.
So Time Machine is pretty amazing. What it would do is you can go back in time to any like point in your computer's history, and it does do some consolidation. So it'll save like it'll back up every hour for like the last 24 hours, and then every day for like the last month, and then like every week, like indefinitely or some schedule like that. Right.
Nice.
And so the idea is you can go back to any point. So with mine, it's not quite as easy. I'd have to dig through the folders and then figure out what changed. It's not as seamless as that. But if you look at like how a solution like Time Machine works, it's all done through the use of what's called synaptic links. And so synaptic links, that's a little bit beyond the scope of our show here. But it's a way of linking one file to another. And so it's a way of saying, okay, this file is called Zach. I want to link you to this other file in this other directory called Ken. And then when I call Ken, I'm actually calling the file Zach, right?
Yeah.
And so they build these structures across these synaptic links. And the thing that scares me about Time Machine, and it doesn't fail often, but when it does fail, it fails catastrophically. And so I've seen solutions where, people think they have good backups because they've been using Time Machine like they're supposed to dutifully for years, and then all of a sudden when it's time for them to restore from it, something happened. And they're like, oh, sorry, problem. Please format the volume and re-backup your computer with Time Machine. And that's not a great solution.
No. Well, what do we do about, like, so my computer, I have my main drive. And I have three secondary drives. Sorry, a secondary, a tertiary, and a whatever the fourth one is.
Sure.
It's like one's 500 gig, one's 1 terabyte, one's 2 terabyte, one's 6 terabyte. So would it? I mean, the other ones typically they just hold documents, pictures, videos, and data, right? Because I take a lot of video, so I need to store a lot of my video.
Sure.
So would it be worth my time to make like a 10 terabyte copy or 10 terabyte clone, or should I just make a clone of my OS drive and leave it at that? I mean, what do you think?
Well, again, that goes back to your data classification. And so, you know, if you had a multi-drive system like that, it would come down to, you know, what was on that data, or what was on each of those drives, how valuable is it?
Hmm.
You know, one thing you could do is, you know, you could have data on multiple drives, preventing against drive failure. That doesn't really protect you against physical loss. So that's you know, that's just a choice you have to make. You know, a lot of time you start dealing with multiple volume solutions, you start talking about RAID. You know, RAID is a way of tying together multiple disks to make a bigger and often faster disk. You can also give you some redundancy as well. So if you have five hard drives, you can lose one hard drive altogether, basically lose, you know, 20% of your hard drive space. And then you can throw another one in and it can recalculate what was on that drive using some technology that's been developed. And so, you know, you could throw together a RAID array and use that to protect against drive loss. But you want to make sure you have a good copy too.
Makes sense. Okay.
One thing that people often do is they'll have a RAID array because they want that redundancy that provides, but then they'll also copy it to like a really big hard drive. Like, you know, right now you can get like a 10 terabyte hard drive. And so you could copy the contents of your entire RAID array, assuming you had the space, to that 10 terabyte hard drive, and you'd kind of have the best of both worlds. You'd have like the data redundancy and the speed and the benefits you get from RAID. And then you also have like a solid backup copy. And then if you were to throw that up into the cloud, you know, that would satisfy your 3-2-1, you know, backup strategy. And I think you'd be fairly protected. It would be a unique event to render all three of those useless.
I like it. That's actually really cool. When I was a computer technician doing bench work, you know, we did a lot of stuff with RAID. And I mean, yeah, it's pretty amazing. But at the same time, I mean, there's... It does suck when you get the customer who comes in and says, my hard drive doesn't work. It's set to, I forget which RAID it is. I don't remember if it's like 0, 1, or 5, but it essentially like they had four drives and they're all connected and one died. And so the rest died. And it's just,
yeah.
It's just, oh, well, no, sorry.
It happens. RAID is not a backup, right? I think that's a big thing that people need to understand. It is not a backup. It's still a single copy of your data. You have some redundancy. It limits your risk.
But it's not a backup.
It's not a backup. And sometimes too, you can actually make things worse. So, oftentimes when people set up a RAID array, they will buy four hard drives from the same manufacturer and the same size. And then they wonder why they all die at roughly the same time, you know? So I'll tell you, so you know, the Samsungs at the old place, the Samsung printers.
Yeah. I remember those.
Those drives are falling over like, dominoes, one after the other.
Yep, I remember that. Oh man, it's awful to deal with that. Like a printer with a hard drive? Are you kidding me? Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous. But
so
wait, like, so really with hard drives, I mean, it's not like the kind of role that you have with like AA batteries. Like you can mix them. That's okay.
With hard, well, so yeah, so there are some solutions. So most RAID solutions, they will choose the smallest of the drives to be the standard size. So if you put a 3 terabyte, a 4 terabyte, a 5 terabyte, and a 6 terabyte in there, it will treat them all as 3 terabytes. Right? And so that bothers some people because they end up losing disk space, right? There's other solutions such as like Jarobo's Beyond RAID and whatever the version that what's that our company? Synology uses. They have some other solution there. And that allows you to put variable drive sizes in there. And use all the capacity. So there's different solutions you can use. But so the advantage of like something like a Jarobo is you could just plug in like hard drives you have, a new hard drive, you need more space, you plug it, you take out your smallest one, you throw a new big one in there and it rebuilds. There's some flexibility there. That's you know, can be pretty useful.
It's pretty nice actually.
Yeah, so I don't know. But again, it's a one copy of data, right? Just because you have five hard drives in a RAID enclosure doesn't mean you have more than one copy of your data, right? And so, you know, backup still applies. Let's see here. So online backup is a great option. So we've talked about that a little bit. So crash plans getting out of the consumer space. You could pay for the business plan. That works pretty well. Two, it's a Java app. I've never really been that crazy into it. You know, teach their own, right? I use a service called Backblaze. I think you use it too. Backblaze is a great tool. They've really invested into their own hardware storage solutions. They're able to get like multi-redundant drive arrays at a scale to where they can offer unlimited backup for $5 a month or $50 a year. I think it's a great deal. I've been with them for a very long time. I've been a customer for 8 years now.
Whoa, 8 years.
8 years.
Wow.
And so I started out by pushing 70 gigabytes up there. That took forever.
back in my dial-up connection at the University of some non-existent place.
Yes. So right now I have 3.967 terabytes up there. So
we've added
a little bit.
Dang it. I was looking at, I have my control panel opened up right now because it's actually backing up as we speak. And I'm only, Ken, at 3.5 terabytes. Damn.
Ooh.
Ken gets me again.
Yeah, that's okay, Zach. Someday I'll get there.
And someday you get some lizard pictures.
Yeah, I'm sure. That'll take me over 5 terabytes, and then I'll be on this space. No, so online backup's great. So a couple things I like about Backblaze is they're really fast. So a lot of the other backup solutions, at least when I was looking at them a long time ago, they'll actually throttle your backups. Like it's in these companies' best interest for all of your data not to be there, which I think is a really shady business practice. Backblaze is really fast. I have gigabit internet. They'll accept it as fast as I can send it. I can back up to them, 70 megabytes a second.
Can I move in with you?
Sure.
Great.
No lizards allowed. So the other nice thing about Backblaze is I'm comfortable with them from a security perspective. They allow me to encrypt the data with my own private key. Conceivably, they couldn't gain access to it. If they were given a warrant for the data, they wouldn't be able to give access to unencrypted data either.
That kind of actually ties into our podcast about passwords and creating passwords, because I think you did the same, but I just used my password manager LastPass to generate a 48 character, random string of letters, numbers, and special characters, and just put that in as my encryption key, and it works perfectly, and I can just recall it from my password manager whenever I need to access my encrypted data.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the way to do it. Good luck, 5-0. I mean, you're going to spend some time tinkering on that.
Boom.
But I think that's, security's got to be an issue. So I recommend an online backup. There's some other tools you can use. I don't know on the Windows side so much. On the Mac side, there's a tool called ARQ, A-R-Q. And that's a great backup tool. It's basically like a online backup client, but allows you to pick your own storage. And so you could choose like Amazon S3, or you could throw it up on Dropbox, or you could throw it up on OneDrive, or any place you basically have online storage. And so if you didn't want to pay a reoccurring fee for something, but yet you had Microsoft Office that came with 1 terabyte of space on OneDrive, what you could do is you could just hook ARC up to this, ARC up to your OneDrive, and then it would just send incremental encrypted backups to your OneDrive and then help you restore them if you ever need to. So there's other solutions like that as well. S3 is Amazon's cloud storage platform. It's really powerful. It's relatively cheap. I think it's around 2 cents per gigabyte per month to store stuff up there. They have another service that's a lot cheaper. It's called Amazon Glacier. And the difference there is that the data isn't nearly as accessible. So if you needed to restore a file from your Glacier backup, you might have to wait several hours.
What?
So
why?
Yeah. Well, that's how they make it cheaper, right?
Oh, I guess that's why they call it Glacier then, huh?
Right. Mm-hmm. So, but the nice thing is it's like really cheap. So the thing is, like, I mean, you wouldn't want to put, like, you know, something really important on it. But if you had, you know, your, you know, I don't know, high school film project out there, you probably don't need that instantaneously or something. You know, it's a reasonable option. Backblaze has their own sort of cloud storage thing that's different from their online backup solution. It's called Backblaze B2. And that's crazy cheap. It's 0.5 cents per gigabyte per month.
0.5 cents. So let's see here, per gigabyte per month, right?
Right.
So let's see. I have currently in my backup 3.5. So I have, that's 3,540 gigabytes. Right. Times, you said it was half a penny?
Right.
0.5. So it would cost me... Wait, no, that... It says that would cost me $1,770.
No, you're doing math wrong.
I'm doing my math wrong.
It would cost you 1,000...
That's pennies.
That would cost you...
$17.
Yes. And 50 cents a month.
Wow. All right.
So, that's not a great deal compared to the $5 a month you spend on Backblaze.
Oh, yeah.
But I use it for just like redundant copies. So I have a copy of all my photos on B2 as well as on Backblaze. The nice thing about Backblaze is like Backblaze mirrors my Mac, right? So if I make a change to my Mac, it's going to get backed up to Backblaze. The nice thing about B2 is it doesn't do that, right? It's just static files. And so I have to go intentionally try to change it. And so if my Mac were to get hit by ransomware... Right, this malware that came in and tried to, you know, encrypt all my files and make me pay, you know, $300 in Bitcoin to get the encryption key. Like, it conceivably could have, it's going to affect the files on my Mac, and then my Mac is actually going to back up encrypted files to Backblaze. Now, Backblaze has a mechanism to specify a time, and so I want to roll back to, you know, before this malware hit, but it's still going to affect the data on there. And so, you know, there's a way to deal with it. It's still going to be a pain. On B2, I don't have to worry about that. It's not going to get hit by malware because it's not connected to my PC. It's like the nice thing about having an off-site, offline backup. So, yeah. Now I should say all of these solutions typically have some mechanism of rolling back, but not all. When I was in grad school, one of my team members... it was actually crazy. We were sitting around a table, and I was, we were just, like, talking, and all of a sudden I looked up, and we had a shared Dropbox folder, and my Dropbox indicator was going crazy. I could just see it was syncing and syncing and syncing, so I opened it up to see what was going on. I started seeing all these files with the extension .locky, and I was like, oh, that's not good. And what happened is while I was sitting there, my classmate had opened an email from Amazon, and like a moron downloaded the attachment, opened that, and installed a piece of ransomware on his PC.
Oh, dude.
And it had infected, it was encrypting all of his files, including those files on, our shared Dropbox folder, right? So I helped him like shut the power of that off and everything, And we formatted his PC and, like, you know, went through everything and tried to restore everything we could. A couple of interesting things. So I had his encrypted files in my Dropbox, right? So it didn't spread to my machine, but it still synced his files. That's one of the disadvantages of a syncing solution. So I had Backblaze backups. So what I did is I just grabbed the backup from, like, the hour before that happened, dumped it into our Dropbox folder, synced with the rest of our group, and we were back in business. As far as this specific team member, he was the kind of guy who used Dropbox as his sole backup solution, right? So he was kind of screwed for a little bit because all of his backups were encrypted. However, Dropbox has a great feature where if you like get on their support and you send them an email or a message through their support ticket system, they can actually restore your Dropbox to a, like, date and time prior to the infection.
Whoa.
And so he was actually really lucky. We submitted this ticket, and I remember it took him, like, 6 days to get back to us. They are not speedy at all. I think if you pay Dropbox some money, he was just using their free plan. But I think if you pay them, you get probably a little bit better support. But anyway, he's like, hey, yeah, I got hit with this ransomware at like 11 o'clock on Tuesday. Can you roll it back to 10:30? And they're like, yeah, sure, no problem. And it was like a couple of days after. So I think this whole thing, I think he was without his data for like 10 days before they finally flipped the switch and everything synced back. And in the end, he got all of his data back. But it wasn't an ideal situation. But I have to give Dropbox credit for that. So
yeah, nice job, Dropbox. It's actually kind of incredible to hear.
Yeah, so again, I think the key to having backups, the key to successful backups are multiple copies on multiple formats, and some of which not being on site. I'd encourage you to encrypt all of your backups, right? So you can just encrypt a drive using your OS. On Mac, it's pretty easy. On Windows, you can enable BitLocker. It's pretty trivial. If you have, it limits your vulnerability to having your backup stolen, having your personal information identified. All of my backup drives are encrypted. If somebody walks off one of my external hard drives, that's fine. I keep an external hard drive at my office. I struggle with that sometimes. Like if I were to get fired or like, you know, they were wanting to search my premises, they could go in and grab the hard drive. The difference is it's encrypted with AES 256-bit encryption. So, I mean, I'd be out a hard drive. I wouldn't be out the data. We talked about this before, but encryption is also, it's a double-edged sword. It makes sure that nobody else can get in and see your data. It also makes sure that you can't get in and see your data unless you have the key. And so if you start dealing with like these sort of worst case scenarios, you need to think through what's your key management strategy. So I'll be honest. I don't know any of the encryption passwords to any of my backups. Right, if you were to ask me, torture me with like a hot stick, like I have none of that information. It's all kept in my password manager. I keep my password manager distributed enough that it's very unlikely that I'll ever lose access to it. If I did, that would be a bad day. So just make sure you keep your data secure, but you also make sure that you'll be able to access it if you need to.
Yep, that's a good takeaway. That's definitely a really good takeaway. I don't know, like, how much would you emphasize not knowing your own, I guess, encryption keys or even your own passwords? Like, how important is that to you that you don't know them?
Well, I wouldn't. It's a product of having really secure passwords. So if I were to choose a password for all of my drives that was all the same and it was relatively, even if it was like a good password, even if it was just like a long passphrase, like Zach loves furry lizards and skirts. Like, that would be, like, a reasonable passphrase I could use for all of my hard drives, right? And so I could remember that easily. I'd get a chuckle every time I typed it in. That'd be all great and everything. And so that's definitely an option I could use.
Well, what about, what about if it's, like, a 16-character randomly generated password and you just somehow happen to memorize it?
Well, then I think that's great. I mean, your only risk there is like somebody could potentially beat you out of it, right?
Mm.
Or beat it out of you.
Well, what if... Oh, okay, never mind. I'm not going to go into the what-ifs on that.
But yeah, I mean, I think there's some interesting situations. I think it's probably important to have a mechanism to recover information. And, you know, the title of the show is PerSec, personal security, right? I'm certainly... I'm not 100% transparent with all my security measures that I take on this podcast, even though we only have like 4 listeners. But I have strategies for recovering some of this information if I need to, and I'm going to just leave that at that. But you just need to make sure that you're not a victim of your own security, right? And I think that's the point. Backups are there. If you need to use a backup, something is probably not gone well. And so you need to make sure you don't, think yourself out of having a backup after all. So just to close out, what I wanted to do real quick is I wanted to go over my backup solution. We've talked about most of it. I just wanted to, you know, sort of get it out there for y'all. Give you some idea of what like a really paranoid guy would do. Okay. So my main computer is a MacBook Pro. It has an SSD in it. Because of the size of the SSD and the size of my photo library, I can't keep everything local. So I have my images are all stored in the iCloud photo library, right? That means I don't have, like, you know, I don't have all of my images downloaded to my hard drive. It's one of the things that I don't like about my current setup. Next computer I buy, I'm going to buy it with a ridiculous size SSD, so I'll always have a local copy on my laptop where I need to go. So all this information, I have about 500 gigabytes of photos. They're all kept in the cloud. But I also keep them on my, on an external hard drive as well. I have a 5 terabyte Seagate external that I plug into my MacBook Pro regularly. They're both backed up to Backblaze using the cloud, over the internet, using encrypted backups. That 5 terabyte drive is encrypted with AES 256-bit encryption and a crazy password. And so I'm fairly confident there. Now, if that 5 terabyte hard drive died, that's also where I keep my Plex library, all the TVs and TV shows and movies that I've acquired over the years. So if that were to die, that would suck. So that's why I keep that backed up that way. I only have one backup of those movies. Again, that goes to my data classification scheme. Like, I could tolerate losing my movies and TV shows, as bad as that would be. It wouldn't be the end of the world. Photos, I can't let that happen. So of my PC itself, it's also backed up with 3 or 4 other external hard drives that I use Carbon Copy Cloner to take clones of. These are distributed across my house and also at my office. And so as I go into work, or if I go in here, I'm always swapping these drives out and making sure they have an up-to-date clone. I have a safe that I put the hard drives that are not currently my cloned drive, my specified clone drive. It provides some protection against theft and some protection against fire. Not a lot, but some. I'm fairly confident that in my ability, if something really bad were to happen, aside from my photos and movies, which conceivably I could download off of, aside from my movies and TV shows, which I could conceivably download off of Backblaze, I could be up and running within, 12 hours. I use iCloud Drive as my main syncing agent or service, and that fills a lot of the gaps. And so if my latest clone is a week old in my office, all of my information that I've entered and worked on over the last week will be in the iCloud Drive, and it will sync back down. Same with the photos, and I'd be in good shape. That is probably overkill, admittedly, but that's why we do the show, because we do such things. And I feel really confident. There are some risks. I don't use ZFS, so I'm not as protected against bit rot as I probably should be. It's possible that information is changing on this drive that I have no knowledge of, and if I ever need it, that file could be damaged beyond repair, and I may not be able to open up this file when I really need it the most. That's something I worry about. As disk sizes increase, the probability of getting errors in one of your files goes up. And unless you are able to devote the resources and have the skills to maintain some sort of crazy ZFS rig, I think that that's just a risk we're all going to have to live with.
Yeah, pretty much. At the end of the day, there's only so much you can do.
But that's kind of what I do. I'm pretty comfortable with that. My wife, she's not nearly as tinfoily as I am. But she follows a similar structure. She has a local backup that she uses on an encrypted external hard drive, and then she has a Backblaze subscription. So she follows the 3-2-1 model, which I think is sufficient for her needs. I do take on the archivist role, so I have copies of her files on my backed up media as well, just to ensure that there's no loss. But that's me, Zach. Is that too much?
I'm the guy who wants to point and laugh. I'm not really. I'm not that kind of guy. I feel like with as much as you have, as much as you use to keep yourself backed up, that I almost want to point and laugh, but I know that you're gonna be the guy who wins out at the end of the day when, you know, your computer, like both of our computers crash and you have a cloned hard drive sitting right there. You can just pop right in and be good to go. Or, you know, oh, you want to recall this file, so you just download it from the cloud, you know, or whatever the case may be, you know, and I'm stuck here with only, I only have Backblaze. That's all I have. So, you know, I'm going to rue the day when, you know, my OS hard drive dies and I go, well, crap, now I have to, I have to buy a new hard drive and then I have to reset up Windows, reinstall all my programs, copy everything over, get all my settings the way I want them to. It's going to take me a lot longer. So, Ken, you know, I want to say you're crazy, but at the end of the day, you're going to be ahead when catastrophe strikes.
Well, let me just say this. I think if there's one thing, like a mere mortal who stumbles across the show, could do, it's to sign up for Backblaze. So I don't think you're that far off. I might throw in a local encrypted copy of your boot drive. I think if you did that, you'd be in really good shape.
Think so?
But the fact that you have Backblaze will take care of most things. Is there risk with that? You bet, right? Just like you said, you don't have a clone backup, so if your drive's down, you're out, you're down until you until you're able to get a new drive in there and reinstall your environment. And then you have to restore your data over your internet, which, you know, could take a really long time. So that's not an ideal solution at all, but at least you're protected. At least the data is available. You know, Backblaze has that option now where they'll ship you a hard drive with all your data on it for free, as long as you return it. And so, you know, conceivably you could be up in a matter of days. The question just becomes like, what's your risk threshold? Is it worth getting a hard drive, external hard drive, just to, you know, keep local copies on, you know, and if you're comfortable with the risk that you're taking, then, you know, I think you're in much better shape than the vast majority of people.
Yeah. At the end of the day, I'm extremely happy that I have Backblaze. I mean, you know, we already talked about the price, so we're not shills for Backblaze, though. Honestly, if we were ever offered, I would happily be a shill for them. You know, but it's $5 a month. It's unlimited. And it's such peace of mind when I know I can take my SD card, which has the Eclipse photos and Lizard photos on it, shove that into my computer, copy it over, and know that the next day they will all be backed up and I don't have to worry. I don't have to worry those photos ever disappearing. I don't have to worry about my house, my apartment burning down. I don't have to worry about my hard drives dying because I know I'll have a backup of all my data. Now, if Comcast would get in the game and stop throttling my upload speed, my download speed is amazing. It's 250 megabits. But anyway, that's whatever. I'm not going to get into that. But, you know, yeah, I like it. It's totally, 100% worth it. Even just Backblaze alone. You sign up, you pay the $5, and you install the program and you just sit there. It does its own thing by itself. You have like little you need to do. The only thing I did when I installed it is I told it, hey, don't back up my Steam games, my computer games, because I don't need a backup of those. That doesn't make sense. Sure. But you get the idea.
You classified your data.
Yep.
Put it into place. Exactly. Yeah. No, I think it's a great action. And again, like Backblaze is just an example. It's a service we use. I think it's great. Again, we're unpaid shills for them. But there's other solutions as well. You know, look into a program like Arc, and back it up to wherever you want. If you want to back it up to S3, great. If you want to back it up to, you know, Google Drive, great. Whatever works. The big key is, to me, a backup, it's not a backup unless it's automated, and unless you don't have to think about it. If it's something that you manually have to drag some files to a hard drive or burn a DVD like some people do or whatever, it's not going to get done. You're going to do it whenever you think of it, which might be every couple months. And, you know, Murphy's Law is going to come into play and you're going to lose data. You know, working in IT for as long as I did, I can tell you horror stories about people losing data. It makes me, it really depresses me to see people's, like, you know, photos of their life just wiped out.
Oh, not only that, I've seen customers get actually violent over us telling them, hey, your hard drive has died. You have two options, either to accept that fact or we can send it over to California and have the data potentially recovered for thousands of dollars, I mean, just violent. Losing data, it just brings out all sorts of emotions. Obviously depressing ones, but also angry ones. It's just, it's awful. It sucks. And, you know, there's no excuse. There really is. There's the cheap solutions out there. Go get them.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. You know, when I worked for the university at the help desk, we'd charge $60 to reformat your computer and do a backup. And we charge $40 if you didn't want the backup, right? And I had to watch these people, like the college students, they didn't have a lot of money, and they'd have to choose between their photos and $20, right? And I guess statute of limitations are up. Like if that in that situation, I would always do the backup for free every time. The data that's there. I mean, yeah, it's silly stuff, right? Some people want to keep their video games or whatever. There's high scores, but other people, it's all about their photos or their records from their family. It's just terrible stuff. See that lost? I encourage everybody to take some proactive measures. There's a lot of technologies out there, a lot of options, a lot of them don't cost very much money. They can really say provide some peace of mind and save you from some heartache. So there's one thing we can encourage you to do is just do something, anything that'd make us happy. So
exactly.
Easy well, day. Zach, I didn't think we had that much to talk about.
No, I actually didn't think so either, to be honest. It seemed like a simple subject. In fact, looking at our show outlines, then I mean, this is definitely less than what we usually deal with. But man, I really like this subject. This is important. It's not hard. It's easy, and it just, oh my God, the peace of mind. It's like when you set up a budget for yourself. You know, there's peace of mind knowing, hey, if I go to the grocery store and spend this amount of money, I'll be fine. I'll be within my budget. It's like, it's the same thing. You know, you spend a little bit of money, and you know, hey, your data is all there.
Yep.
It's safe. I love that so much. I love it. This is a good subject, Ken. This is a great subject. Good choice.
Yeah, no, so that's good. So all of our listeners, all three of you out there, you've been so informed. And so we don't want to hear any data loss stories. So,
Hey, Chad. Hey, Chad's wife. Hey, Chad's kid.
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know. Hey, Tyler. So, yeah, we just need to back up your stuff, and we'll be cool.
Yeah, easy as that.
All right, Zach. It's been real.
Ken, it has been a pleasure and an honor, as usual.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, see you next week.
See you next week, Ken. Bye-bye. All right,
bye.